four earrings. I played guitar, I sang from about 10th grade until a sophomore in college. I used to tell my dad, I don't want to work hard, you work too much. My dad was always working.
You graduate from Brentwood, you go to UCLA, no, to
UCSB.
So from there, what was that like, and why did you choose that university? Because I know Brentwood is like the Harvard.
Everybody goes to Ivy League, right?
Yeah,
except for Ryan. So it was interesting because I was, I don't know why, but I always had friends that were older. So by the time I was in ninth grade, my girlfriend was in college and my best friend was in college. So I was like hanging out at USC and Pepperdine, and I wanted nothing to do with high school. My parents hated that too. They were like, they wanted me to, you know, conform and be part of that. And I was like, nah, I'm good with college girls and college friends and kegs. And, you know, and they were pretty progressive. Like, they were always like, you can drink, just don't drive. And I could actually have girls spend the night, but
that's pretty progressive.
It was pretty progressive. But, I think because Brentwood was so hard as a school, meaning, you know, it still is. It was great academically, but you had 5-6 hours of homework every night. And I still remember we had a senior thesis, like an 80-page thesis. You wrote, spent your whole year like creating a thesis. By the way, I wrote my thesis on the legalization of marijuana, and I almost got kicked out of school for it.
What year was this?
1993.
Yeah.
So
the Chronic, not to go off subject, but I think the Chronic album came out in 1993 and 92.
It did. It came out 1 year before. And
did it?
Yep. And I literally wrote, my whole thing was on both the financial and the socioeconomic impact and how it would be the best thing to legalize, federally legalize marijuana. And you're assigned this teacher proctor that's supposed to oversee your thesis because you spend the whole year doing it.
Right.
It's like you can't do it on that. So my parents, who always lobbied for important things, came in with me and the headmaster. They're like, this is what he wants to do it on. Like, you can't tell him he can't do it on that.
Right.
So then she gave me a C+. I mean, I'm telling you, this was an awesome paper. This was like, here's how the government's going to get out of debt, right? And my dad reads it, and my mom reads it, and they go back and they're like, this is bullshit. You got a C+ because of the topic. So they actually got it regraded. I still think they only gave me like a B, but it was such a small school. It was 80 people in a class. It was so much just tough that I wanted to go to like an easy, fun place. So yeah, I got in a lot of the Ivy Leagues. My mom and dad took me on the East Coast tour and tried to convince me. And I was like, no, I'm good. I got an UCSB. That's where I'm going. And they'd always said I could go where I wanted, but they were pissed.
Yeah, because Ivy League, I mean, think about where your dad came from, your mom being from here. The Ivy League, when you get into Harvard, you get into Yale, it carries something. So your dad is thinking not about you being an entrepreneur and, you know, being who you are today, he's thinking about structure and helping you create this lifestyle. So he's going to be a little pissed, especially when you get accepted.
Yep.
And then you can create the legacy.
Yep.
And that's what I look at.
Well, he also didn't have the opportunity. Like, he had the grades and he had the smarts, but they didn't have the resource. So here we did. And I think for him, now that I look at it, I see why to him it was so important, right? He had provided this opportunity for me he didn't have. But yeah, I went to UCSB. I don't think I ever attended a class the whole time I was there. I just showed up for my midterms and my finals, and because of Brentwood's training, breezed through it. And a lot of people know this, but I was a musician. So I had hair down to here, four earrings. I played guitar. I sang from about 10th grade until a sophomore in college. I used to tell my dad, I don't want to work hard. You work too much. My dad was always working. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to be like you. I'm just an artist. And so junior year, my dad called me and he's like, hey, I got you an internship at Dean Witter, which became Morgan Stanley. And I'm like, I don't want to do business. What are you talking about? And what was ironic is I was doing business, but I didn't realize it. So my dad, I'd been trading stocks since I was 6, because my dad used to make me open the Wall Street Journal, write down what stocks I liked and why, take my piggy bank, I put on my little 3-piece suit, go to Dean Witter, his broker, tell him, here's why I want to buy Disney stock, here's my $20. So I actually had some savings from trading stocks. And so when I was in college, I bought a clothing store called Ivy Vintage, and we would repair Levi's that had rips, and we could perfectly repair them. And for me, it wasn't about the money. It was that's where all the sorority girls came in. So I was like, this is a dream come true. And then the coffee shop across the street. So my dad's like, what? He calls me, says, I'm like, I told you I don't want to do business. What do you mean? He's like, what do you think you're doing? It's like, I mean, I'm making money so I could take girls on dates at a place that I'm meeting the girls I'm taking on dates.
Oh my God.
And he's like, so we had this little argument, and I said, look, if I do this internship, you'll never bring up business with me again. He said, yeah, deal, but you got to cut your hair. And I was like, because they didn't want to take me otherwise. So I cut my hair. Remember, first day of work, it was here in LA, it was a summer internship. And on top of, from when I was a kid, making me learn to trade stocks, maybe nobody was typing. I had to learn how to type by the time I was like 10. I was actually doing my dad's business plans for him, his charts and graphs for his mergers and acquisitions. And so they gave me this stack of paper, and at the time it was pretty simple. It was like inputting all these names into something, which was a big deal at the time. The guy who unfortunately is deceased now, but Bud Pernall, who was my first boss and only real boss, he was like, I remember the first day of work. He goes, hands me this tape, Swimming with Sharks. Go watch this. This is your life. I don't know if you saw the movie, but it's basically it's about an assistant to an agent who just his life is just destroyed by work. And so he hands me this stack of paper. He's like, I need this by Friday. So 2 hours later, I walked in. I'm like, it's done. He goes, what's done? It's like the stack, because nobody really could type that at the time. It wasn't a big thing. So I quickly like went up the ranks, and I became the. They offered me a full-time job, so I transferred to UCLA, and I actually loved it. It was sales, right? And at the time, I'm working in this high net worth division where there was no, it was before like Sarbanes and all this stuff, where I'm watching what's going on, and I knew about trading stocks, and I'm like, wait, so these guys sitting here are getting a call from guys sitting in New York who have too much whatever it was intel in their portfolio, or sitting in Dean Witter, which became Morgan Stanley, I said their portfolio. So they then call the dude whose money they managed to say, hey, we think it's a really good idea you buy intel. So they sell it from here to there, and that's how, and then they get paid to do that. I'm like, this is crazy. So I went to my dad, and I'm like, at the time the word hedge fund wasn't yet created, and I'm like, I went and looked up, and there was this thing called a limited partnership Reg D. And I was like, you can, without getting all these licenses, pool money together and trade. And I went and found a lawyer, and he's like, yeah, it's like 50 grand to write a book. So I went to my dad and said, can I borrow $50,000? I'm going to start this limited partnership. It's exactly what my dad did. Starts laughing at me like, who the fuck's going to give a 21-year-old money?
That's crazy.
So I actually, I downloaded it. And remember, you got to remember, the internet at the time wasn't like, there wasn't
No.
Google or search, but I managed to find a limited partnership book. I rewrote it, called one of my dad's lawyer friends and said, hey, I have this book this guy wrote for me for this limited partnership. Can you take a look at it? He reads it. He calls me and goes, half of it's great and half of it's fucking awful. I don't know. It doesn't even make sense. He goes, I can redo it for 10 grand. So I don't even know. I had scrapped together 3 grand here, grand there. And I launched this limited partnership, i.e. hedge fund, 21. Cut to 2 years later, I'd raised $250 million and was managing money. When I say managing money, I'm running a hedge fund for pretty, you name it, from Jerry Bruckheimer to Kirk Kerkorian to Terry Semel. It was the who's who of Hollywood, Michael J. Fox. And, it was just like kind of took off like wildfire.
I mean, what's interesting is how you were creative in the process. And so it goes back to like your ability to pivot, right? Like every time you pose with a problem or situation, you kind of figure out how to get out of it or how to make the most out of it. Like most people be presented like, okay, you need 50 grand. And then the dream stops. The dream completely stops, like right away. It's over because they're like, well, nobody's gonna give me 50 grand anyway. You kind of talk yourself out of it. You kind of talk yourself into it. Like, wait a minute, let me do some research. At the time, I don't know what year it was, but internet moved so slow.
96. There was no internet.
It
It
was
was
no,
dial
it was
up.
dial, yeah, it's real bad, right? So, and you're able to pull together information. I mean, what I'm curious about is, what gave you this skill set of taking a vision and making it live? Because a lot of people can't do that. Like you seen about the jeans, you started the company, boom. boom, you're going. And it seems like, being at a school like Brentwood, growing up in a household, that pivot point where your dad, where you were 14 and your dad moved everybody out and said, hey, look, you're gonna get your shit together today. Like, did all of that create like this ultimate pivoter and like this person that don't accept no at all? Because at 21, even though you was out in Pepperdine having your beer, hanging out, it's something you didn't quit. Like, you still were thinking, and you were still moving, and you were developing business, putting a vending machine in every realtor place. Where does that come from? Like, what drives you?
So it's interesting because I feel like the drive changes, right? And I think when you're younger, you don't know what drives you per se, right? So I think back, and I think what ultimately first drove me, right? In the beginning, I call it the entrepreneurial spirit, and there's a lot of books written on the entrepreneurial spirit, and I think you kind of have it or you don't. And I think that's just something I was lucky I was born with. It was just like my brain looks around at everything and thinks that there's something needed there. It's missing. And if it was there, it would work. And I think that maybe was early on a way to fulfill, like I wasn't fulfilled by the normal stuff in school and, just doing math and reading and this. I needed like a puzzle. Like I love Rubik's cubes still to this day.
Me too.
I like sit there and just do them faster and faster and faster, right? So I think my brain kind of thinks like that. But I think, not I think, I know. At that time in life, 21, 22, people are like, think back, like, why did you start a hedge fund? You were Dean Witter, you could have gone and got, my dad wanted me to get an MBA, or it was, they were very much about higher education or get my MD, or, they really want to be a lawyer. Like, oh, you always should have that to fall back on. And I really remember thinking, my dad's always going to be stronger than me. He had the world record for bench press. He had, whatever it was, five graduate degrees, number one in his class, just zero chance I was going to get that. I forgot what it was, but he had like the record for like the 800, yard run. He had the record for most push-ups in his, like it, you named it, he was the best at it. He spoke eight languages. Not joking. I decided to take Japanese in high school, and
We talked about
yeah.
that and at dinner.
And he goes downstairs to his office, and a week later, he's conversational in Japanese with me. So, what I look back at is I'm like, so I'm 22, and I'm like running this fund, and I'm making a lot of money for a 22-year-old. And I did everything stupid a 22-year-old does. I bought the Ferrari, I bought the giant house, which actually Diana Ross lives in still to this day, the house that I built or someone else built. I bought from him building it, and it's a pretty sick house. And I think back and I'm like, well, my dad was always gonna have better education, was always stronger, was always, gonna be a better reader, better language, but I made more money. That was literally the only thing I think at the time that was driving me. It was like, I can make more money then. Because he wanted to make money, but that wasn't his drive, right? And so my drive wasn't about the money. It was like, I never realized it until it was like I was competing with, I had to prove myself to my dad. And that was also proving myself to myself. And then that changes, right? Because as you get older and you realize what's important to you, right? And you said something really important earlier, which is until you have nothing, your backup's against the wall, you figure out who you are. So I don't think I actually figured out my life motivation until I was in my 40, young. I mean, I'm 40 now, but like early 40s, about 40, had a child and thought I was losing everything. And that's when I finally figured out, now I know what my life is about.
So from 22, okay, hedge fund, you can be misunderstood the way you see things, like how fast your brain is moving. So like if you have partners or people when you're at 22, imagine being in Hollywood, LA, and you're meeting people and you're able to move on pretty quick. It's a skill set, but also I can see where people could be misunderstood, understand you and not get an understanding of your work ethic or commitment to excellence because you're able to move on so fast. Is because when I'm listening to the story and I'm looking at how fast you were able to move from one business to the next business to the next business to the next business. And I myself is like that. I'm not celebrating. Like you celebrated, yeah, you bought the big house at 20 because you were waiting. You grew up in Brentwood.
Yeah.
So you need the Ferrari. You're
Yeah.
like,
I
wait a
need to
minute, I'm gonna
pop.
show all of you guys.
That's exactly what I did.
I'm gonna show everybody. I'm gonna pull
I
up.
went to my high school reunion, pulled up in that Ferrari.
I'm gonna pull up. And so do you think that kind of gave you maybe been either misunderstood or kind of gave you like an ego of like, I gotta show you at 22 because the frontal lobes don't even develop until you're 25.
Yep.
So, people that are listening, when you're 22, you make a lot of mistakes,
A lot.
but you had a lot of success. And a lot of people judge you based on those mistakes.
It's very interesting because I was, when I think about why did I buy a Ferrari? Why did I buy the big house? Did I want a big house? Did I
Right.
actually want a Ferrari? And the answer is no. Yes, everybody does in a way, right? But it didn't make me happier. I didn't
Right.
like walk into the big house and be like, oh, I did it.
Right.
I never sat back to, oh, look, I did it. And what I realized is it was all for other people. And I was always, that's why I said I didn't really figure my life out till I was older, because it was always for other people, whether it was for my dad or to prove to the people from high school around me or to even just prove I could do it, right? And it was like, what I think it was like, do what? Be successful. Let's be successful. Well, in my mind, it was make money.
Right.
Right. And I think a lot of people's mind, that's what success is equated with. And so for me, that's what it was equated with. So when you talk about how did I move businesses, it was because to be successful at that time, at 21, 22, or 20, was just about how much money you're making. It
Right.
wasn't about what I was doing,
But
right?
that was stemmed from being driven from your father.
Yep.
Because the only thing that you felt like you could do better was make money.
That's right.
So now people that are watching our audience, they understand why you were driven. So it's not that you were just driven just for the money. It was an invisible hand pushing you. And the invisible hand was your father.
100%. And I didn't know, I mean, I knew it and I figured it out later.
Right.
But yeah, and it was interesting because, I mean, I definitely, it's funny because I was definitely cocky, but I wasn't cocky like show-offy in a way, like look at me. I think I was more insecure.
Right.
So I was show-offy in a way of like, I did it. See, I did it, and I'm proving to you I did it. And so I think a lot of people, I look at people today, especially younger people, and if they're like kind of cocky and driving a fancy car or they're trying to kind of show off, I always think like, are they cocky or are they insecure? Because I
Right.
know when I had it, I was like covering up insecurities to be like, look, I'm good enough. I did it. See, I can do it. I can do it. I'm better at something.
So what would you say? What would you say to yourself right now at 21? What advice or what type of conversation would you have with yourself? Because our podcast is about failure, right? You had failure, but you had a lot of success. But in that, there's some things that was missing. What would you say to yourself today?
It's interesting because I wouldn't have listened to myself. I probably would have said the same shit my parents said to me at that time, which I didn't listen to, and led to the biggest failure that I then had at that point, which, was only the biggest failure to that point. But I remember my dad and my mom as much as my dad saying, like, hey, you're managing money and you're 22, you shouldn't be driving a Ferrari. Like, that's not a good look,
Right.
And you slow down on everything, you're moving too fast, and enjoy. In fact, they used to say that you're 21, go enjoy your 20s. Like, you don't have to be working 24 hours a day. What are you doing? And I probably would tell myself the same thing, and I wouldn't have listened because I thought I knew better, and I was making all kinds of money, and we were crushing it in my portfolio. I mean, I was doing options before people were doing options, and was, I mean, we had, I had the very, when you look back at the companies I invested in, they're pretty interesting, diverse companies before people were doing what. Even fintech and biotech and interactive media and there's a really funny story in that, which is a life lesson. But I didn't listen, And I put everything I had back into my own business. I didn't diversify at all. So I owned 50% of my own hedge fund. And then September 11th happened. The markets crashed. We had invested everything into, I was building companies. So I was finding companies that were startups and or co-founding them, investing in them, helping them build. We had like six of them, I think. They all went from like, they were about to sell or IPO to like, either we're about to go out of business or we need to do down rounds. I had to shut everything down. I owned, like I said, half the fund. I remember I went to my dad, said, "What do you think I should do? You know, these companies are, I don't know if they're gonna make it." And my dad said, "You're gonna take all your ownership and you're gonna give it to your investors." And I was like, "That's all I have." I took every penny I made and put it back into owning my own fund, right? I didn't take the profits out. I mean, I took some money out to like buy a house and buy a car, but that was about it. He said, "No, all you have is your name." So I did just that. I put it,
So
distributed
you
it to
distributed everything.
everything. Shut the business down, distributed everything, and went from, you know, the house and the Ferrari to, I think it was an $1,800 a month or $1,600 a month, like 1.5 bedroom in Hollywood, and trying to figure out. I thought I was going to go get my degree in physics because I'm a physics junkie. And what
But
am
that
I going
didn't
to do
take you long
next?
enough because your brain moves so fast. So even through that failure, moving from your own house, the Ferrari, shutting down the fund because of 9/11, and you know, that happened. That was a critical point in history, and it affected you
A lot,
dramatically,
a lot.
And your father, which I would say the same thing, is the only thing that you have is your name. So at that moment, did you cry? Did you turn to, like, did you drink? Was you smoking? Like, something, did you lean on anything, or did you really just take that step back and go back to that point when you were 14?
I'd say I went more back to the point when I was 14. I definitely like retreated into the anxiety
Anxiety.
channel.
That's what I was thinking.
And I remember I actually started seeing a shrink again who I hadn't seen in a while. And, you know, I went back on like anti-anxiety meds
That's
and,
right.
you know, like, cause when anxiety comes in, you're just like, I mean, and it's very situational for me. And I kind of retreated and really was like, you know, in my shell for a bit.
So
And
did you stay in the house? Did you
yeah,
come out? Did
I
you have a
stayed in my,
girl?
I
Did,
didn't have
like,
a girl. So I had a fiance when with the hedge fund, and then
when everything
when,
was gone, she was gone.
yeah, and it wasn't, it's funny because we're still best friends today. And it wasn't like that. We were just really not meant to be together that way, but it was, you know, I was a different person when, you know,
You're 22.
so, you know, I was alone, and I was very alone because also the people around me, a lot of them had been, you know, the people I was working with, and all of a sudden, 22, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
Right.